This is Forensic Talk, all talk at all crime. The investigative journalist who believes he broke the 50-year unsolved brutal murder of a former U.S. senator's daughter now linked the suspect to being the Zodiac Killer. On Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell, Glenn Wall is an investigative journalist based in Chicago, and his groundbreaking book on the unsolved murder of former Illinois Senator Charles Percy's daughter is Sympathy Vote, a reinvestigation of the Valerie Percy murder. And the latest crime-busting book, Zodiac Maniac, The Secret History of the Zodiac Killer. Welcome back, Glenn. How are you?
Thanks, Jim. Good.
It's been a couple of years, we said it. And one of the things that interests us is that, in particular, as I grew up in that area, I interned for Senator Percy. I have been in the house in Kenilworth where the murder took place, in the pool. This great friends of ours worked in his campaign. And we've covered the Moxley case here in Greenwich and their similarities, wealthy enclave, well-known families, unsolved to a degree, yeah. Especially since Michael Skakel's conviction was thrown out. So we've kind of, you know, kept each other's unsolved cases going, right?
Up to date, yes.
Up to date, it's a good point. And so I guess the first thing to start off with is kind of refresh people on the Valerie Percy murder.
Okay. Like you said, she was the daughter of Chuck Percy, who at the time of the murder was running for the Senate from Illinois. He had, I think it was about 5 weeks before Election Day that the murder took place.
And in fact, the sympathy vote in the title refers to that, right? Because he ended up winning, I think, by a landslide.
Yes. And, well, I mean, it's interesting because a lot of people do think he would have won anyway. He was very well liked. In Chicago and in Illinois. He had run a very close run for Senate or for governor of Illinois 2 years
right.
earlier.
And we should say he was running against, if I'm right, Paul Douglas, who was an institution. So it was, yeah. An upset.
Right. So he was unexpectedly strong from the start. That gubernatorial campaign had some really weird twists. But, it's a good bet he would have won anyway, but the name came from everybody I talked to, whether they were from law enforcement or where they had worked on the campaign or they were volunteers, friends, and whatnot. It was something they all talked about, you know, the sympathy vote.
Now, this was a twin daughter, and in Kenilworth, which is a very minute and highly wealthy town, they'd never had a murder, as you said in your book. Kind of give us a sense of the background there and what happened.
Well, Valerie was about 3 months out of Cornell and had come back for the summer to help work on the campaign, as were some of his other children. And so she hadn't really lived there other than summers for about 4 years. The family was kind of interesting. She had two step-siblings who were younger. They were Chuck's children from his second marriage. But she and her twin sister and her brother, Roger, had all pretty much been raised by the stepmother, who married Chuck, I think, when the other kids were about 3 or 4 years of age. After his first wife had passed away.
Tell us, why do you, and this was a brutal murder in the Percy house, we're now beyond 50 years, and this is obviously a high-profile deal. Why, in your estimation, has it not been solved, and why is it, in your estimation, that you were able to make these uncoverings?
Well, I think, you know, now, I wasn't aware of it at the time of the first book, but now I think it's because the perpetrator has been deceased since 1970. Why he wasn't caught before that, because he was a suspect, I think is because the FBI was very secretive in those days and beyond, and they did not share the information they had with the police in Illinois, the state police, who were leading the investigation. That's why I think it wasn't solved in the first three years or so, and then afterwards, of course, he was deceased, so he couldn't be held, couldn't be tried.
Now, if I have the mileage right, he's actually lived less than a mile from the home, right?
He grew up a block and a half away from Percy. His parents still lived there. This is about a 3-minute walk, I would say. But at the time, he was living in Northern California. However, he traveled he traveled constantly.
And his name, for folks, is William Thorson III. His father was a very a leading businessman, who the chairman of a steel company. So they were, you know, a family with a lot of identity. And this was obviously an interest, you know, a son with major problems. In the Percy murder, and then you can talk about, begin to talk about the M.O. of this guy. Well, why don't you talk about, first off, he was basically just doing break-ins, wasn't he, and risky ones before.
Yeah, he'd been a habitual criminal, breaking into businesses, breaking into homes in the area. Of course, a very wealthy family, so he wasn't motivated by financial gain. You know, so it's a little bit hard to know. He had a extensive history since high school, being committed to county and local, and then later state institutions, from which he always apparently bribed his way out of. I just wanted to get back to the original question, though. You asked me a question before. At the time of the Percy murder, he did have an apartment that he continued to pay the rent on in Chicago, which had been his brother's apartment. And apparently that they continued to rent that until he died in 70.
Do you feel confident, and we'll talk his M.O. again, that he was, this murder was September 18th, 1966, as you say, right before the November election. Do you feel confident he was in Kenilworth?
I do. The interesting thing about that is that when she was killed, that was a Sunday, the 18th. Mm-hmm. I believe the anniversary of his brother's death, the one-year anniversary of his brother's death, was the Wednesday following her murder. So that was September 21st, 1965. So I think it's a pretty good, it's not a stretch to suggest that he was in the area because he had regretted, he actually had his brother murdered the year before. And I think due to things that his wife wrote later, it's pretty obvious that he regretted having done that. And as the Percy murder happened when that anniversary was looming and he had much regret over killing the brother, I don't think it's a stretch to suggest that he would have been in the area not in a good mood the weekend before as this anniversary loomed. And also possibly there may have been some sort of gathering by the family in memory of the brother the weekend before the anniversary of his death, and that was the weekend of the Percy murder.
And you think the parents would have welcomed him at that kind of a thing? Did they suspect he killed him, right?
Yes, the father suspected him immediately. However, there was some sort of reconciliation between the family because he had a son of his own, and once the brother was dead, there were just the two brothers. The grandson and the sister, daughter-in-law, mm-hmm. and he were the only survivors in the family, the only kid. So at some point there was because of the suspicion, the parents didn't have anything to do with them for a while. The question is when. With William having an apartment in Chicago at the time, he certainly did not need some sort of a memorial thing to happen or to be at the parents' house or something like that. He had a residence in Chicago.
Do you having studied him for so long, do you think that he had, do you define a mental illness or something that drove him to this? I mean, we're talking about a kid from a wealthy, family, no money issues, et cetera, and he was always in trouble.
Well, the father regretted having had him committed, thought that he added fuel to the fire by doing this kind of thing. I mean, it was a constant battle between the father and the son, mm-hmm. and he was trying to get money out of his father constantly. But I think he definitely was a psychopath. I think the psychologists had pinned him pretty well on that. I don't know what other kinds of mental issues may have been accompanying that.
All right, so we have a guy, as we get back to M.O., who was breaking into homes, and you suspect had murdered a girl in Chicago, right?
Well, he was a suspect in that case. I believe it was 1957, Judith May Anderson. And that was just a very, that's a notorious case in the city to this day. That's unsolved. It was a dismemberment murder. Her remains were found in some barrels that were sunk. I believe it was in Montrose Harbor. And he was a suspect.
Now, people have to read this book, obviously. Glenn's done a lot of research on the murder itself of the Valerie Percy. Just let me ask, to come into a home where everybody is sleeping and go past rooms to go into Valerie's, and then it's rather brutal, what does that mean to you, and does it look like a rage killing, which usually implies, some sort of relationship, right?
Well, it was absolutely brutal killing. Whether he was hitting her with all of that seemingly overkill because he wanted to silence her from waking everybody else in the house up is a possibility. But the more I've learned about him now is, I mean, he just was a senseless killer. I mean, he was just, he killed people all different kinds of ways, really with no motive other than to do so. And of course, when you get to the Zodiac situation, he's saying he's killing people because he wants slaves for the afterlife. Now, I don't know. You might say that he was suicidal and he just wanted to take as many people with him as he could.
Do you have any sense for, does it strike you as strange that he would break into a house with people in it and then walk by other rooms of people sleeping to somehow brutally murder one of them?
Well, I think given, if he was Zodiac, which I believe he was, the murder is very much an aberration, taking place so close to his parents' house, taking place in a town where he was well known to the police, all these kinds of things. I think that the explanation for that lies in that anniversary of the brother's death that was looming at the time and the wife writing that he very much regretted that. And, she definitely thought he had mental problems and that after the brother died, he took a significant fall mentally from where he had been, which was not great prior to that.
All right. Now, for folks, this is 1970s now, for folks, who was the Zodiac Killer again, and just the overview on him first?
Well, the Zodiac Killer was a serial killer whose first confirmed murder was a double homicide in shortly before Christmas in 1968, and his last confirmed murder was in October of 69, less than a year later, a cab driver in San Francisco by the name of Paul Stein. There were, I believe, two other attacks in between those, both involving couples that were attacked. And then there were a number of killings that took place prior to that in Southern California, which are not confirmed, meaning they don't have proof positive that it was him, but there are a lot of reasons to believe that they were.
And that, why is that one, serial killers, murders, why is that officially unsolved? And has anybody else drawn this link that you've drawn?
As far as I know, nobody's drawn this link, and I didn't expect to draw this link. I didn't study the Zodiac killings prior to writing this, and I arrived through the door of the Percy murder, which is a complete, coming from almost 2,000 miles away in the Midwest.
Right.
Many people have long suspected that he, given the activity that apparently happened in Southern California, that and the long gaps in between, that this person was probably active somewhere, just because they assume that there are things that have not been found, and I've found that's the case, and that's something I'm working on right now.
The guy must have been brilliantly manipulative because his wife Louise Thorson, unwittingly to her, she was almost like an accomplice to the murder of the brother. There were so many links between the rental car being in her name, the gun being in her name,
right.
et cetera. Tell us about Louise and her interpretation of him.
Well, she definitely became aware at some point, like you were saying there, that he was always the one pulling the strings, but always insulating himself from being arrested, much less being charged for these kinds of things. So he was, you know, she was always there to take the arrest for his gun activities and things like this. So I think she believed that he had mental issues. But in her book, now that I understand these things with Zodiac, mm-hmm. there are aspects to her book that just do not make sense. And it really seems to me like she was allowed to put this book out under certain conditions. And so given all of this evidence and whatnot, it seems to me that, there were people behind this watching what she did, approving what she did.
Now, who would that have been?
Well, it was, like I said, it just doesn't make sense.
Who? Why would there be that? What are these conditions, you think, and where are they coming from?
Well, I think that, first of all, there was this trial. She shot him dead.
Right.
And they held a trial in San Francisco, or in, it was in Fresno, I think. And, the prosecution in the case of her charging her with murder, killing her husband, said that she killed him for his money. But if you look at the facts, they had no money at that point. Their houses were, the deeds of both of their houses were in his father's name. The explanation for that was he was financing their existence at that point, and there's other evidence in the book that the parents were writing checks to the kids. So that's just the first of many things in the trial that doesn't make any sense. But there are also things in the book that make no sense. So
does it bother you that in her book, and I guess in testimony, she never linked him to the Percy murder? And do you think she did that she did know or didn't know?
Well, my belief is that she talks about this big confession he made.
Yes.
The evening before she shot him, and my belief is that if he did confess, and it certainly seems like he did, he would have confessed to everything. Zodiac and all of this stuff; those were his biggest achievements. So I don't think in the book she says he confessed to having been behind the murder of the brother and two accomplices of his. But I think that given what I was able to find, there's no doubt that he would have confessed to all of this other stuff. Maybe things I don't even know now.
So you think she's covering up that Percy did it, or that he only just revealed that those three murders?
I think that the reason why her book doesn't make sense is because she knew. And I think that there's a possibility that after she killed her husband, minutes later was down in police station in Fresno, I think she may have unloaded that whole thing on them, and the FBI may have been there within an hour, and they went out to the house and they were able to put all this together. And there just seems to me to be a lot of indications that through perhaps San Francisco police, they put out letters that implied that Zodiac was still out there, but there were no more phone calls from Zodiac. There were no more attacks from Zodiac. There were mm-hmm. no more witness sightings of Zodiac. So that's what I think happened.
Tell her, and we're on our last minute of this segment, why did she shoot her husband?
She shot her husband because he had been beating her savagely for years, and in the days before, if not hours before, and he was going to do it again. And I think basically he wanted her to shoot him. She was holding a gun at the time that he was going to attack her again, and that was it.
We've been talking with Glenn Wall. He investigated the Percy murder, and that has led him to a major serial killer. And we're going to talk more about the Zodiac Maniac coming right up when we get back. We're back with Glenn Wall. He's just got a new book out called Zodiac Maniac, The Secret History of the Zodiac Killer. He didn't expect to be involved in that case, but he found himself in the middle of it. I want to ask you one other thing about Louise Thorson. William Thorson had a stutter, but it would apparently disappear when he morphed into somebody else, in this case a serial killer, which I found interesting. I want you to talk about that. And the other thing that he told her, she had a nice inner core and he had none. How do you interpret that?
Well, she just wrote that in the book, that she explained that he had this plan to kill his parents in order to inherit their money. He had killed, just months before, he had killed his brother and was inheriting his brother's money. And so he had gone into the parents' house under, you know, playing this role. He put stocking over his head and was talking in a different voice. And she explained that they knew that when he did something like this, when he would assume another role, I'm not sure exactly what she said, but it was something very close to that, that he would not stutter. When he figured out what he was going to say, when he pretended to be somebody else, that went away. But so that was the first thing. I mean, when I started reading up on the Zodiac case, and I had no idea that I would ever write anything about it, that was the first thing that jumped out, was the way that the witnesses described the way that this guy talked, which it was a very unnatural way. It was a very rehearsed kind of, there was a sort of cadence to the way that he spoke. And that was the first thing that got me to look into that.
Did you establish, he moved to California, which is where these other murders happened, that he was in all these kind of locales around the dates of these murders, which we'll talk about?
Absolutely. And generally speaking, so like he was traveling to Southern California as early as 1962. He was arrested and I believe pled guilty to a rape in Los Angeles or Santa Monica. I believe it was Santa Monica, at least by 63, possibly was 62. So he was traveling to Southern California, and I believe the first Zodiac activity that's believed to have taken place took place near Santa Barbara in June of 1963.
And in that, this is the Lake Herman Road one, I'm assuming, and there are two young folks, David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen, and it appears to be completely random and remote, which of course is different than the Percy murder, but that's how you
right.
see it?
That's one of the aberrations, and I think the Percy murder happened, like I said, when that, according to what his wife wrote, when that anniversary of the brother's death was looming, but from the brother's death to these murders that happened elsewhere in yep. Southern California to Lake Herman Road, they all took place in remote areas and were seemingly planned in advance. And that worked very well for him going all the way back to 65 when he arranged this thing for an associate to go and kill his brother in Lake Forest. Now that we think he's Zodiac, or now that I think he's Zodiac, it appears he was doing this stuff prior to the brother's death, and see the shootings in 63 took place on this beach in a very remote area. So that was an MO of his.
And you think that even the murder of his brother, which was in my hometown of Lake Forest, that that was designed to be in a remote setting?
Absolutely. You know, and you know the area better than I do. There was something I read about that it was, It was on land that had belonged to a family in the area going way back, and I don't know if it was a park at the time, if part of the land had been taken over by the village of Lake Forest, but it was something like that. I'm not hugely familiar with it, but there was a story there about that.
Did he savagely torture the four murders that in these remote, except for the Presidio one, which we'll talk about? Was it the same? Was there an MO there that was consistent in the way he killed them?
There were consistencies and there were changes. In September of 69, the victims were stabbed. That's the connection, one of the connections to the Percy case, that the knife was a very unusual kind of knife for someone to use to attack a civilian, was very similar, or if not identical, to the knife that Valerie was believed to have been stabbed with.
Which is a very specific type of knife.
Right.
People
have credibly argued, I think, that, you know, the first two attacks, he shot the victims. But this one that took place at Lake Berryessa in September of 69 was post-Manson murders. And, of course, Manson murders were getting all this publicity at the time, and Zodiac was all about publicity because at a certain point he started contacting the media and taunting the police and doing all these things that were, you know, drawing all kinds of stories. And so it's believed that after the Manson murders, he switched over and said, I can stab people as well. So I don't think that's a stretch to suggest that that's what that was. But, of course, if he stabbed Valerie, which there's all kinds of evidence that he did, he had done that prior to that as well.
And he's eventually, when they raided his home, they found 70 tons of weapons, right?
Well, they found a lot at the home, and he had storage lockers in the Bay Area as well. Yes, he had cannons, machine guns, mostly military weapons. And, of course, the weapon that Valerie was stabbed with was bayonet. That's a military weapon. And most of them were old, and this was a World War II era M1 bayonet. And, of course, the Lake Berryessa victims from Zodiac were stabbed, it is believed, with a bayonet, according to the medical examiner.
And the bayonet obviously has to be considered a real strong linkage between these murders.
Sure.
You don't see, there aren't all murders, I assume, that were done by a military-style bayonet. The Presidio one, I want to ask Paul Stein, which was his last one that they could link to the Zodiac, obviously a lot different than these other ones, which were very remote by lakes or off of remote roads. And it was a cab driver that he had tried to rob. And then he wrote some letters off of this, the Zodiac letters, with parts of the shirt in that. Why do you think that one was so different?
I think because he just was doing the minimal that he had to do to prove a point. He had this ongoing thing with the cops at the time in the paper. But also because he was in a downward spiral. And his letters, his writings from that time have been analyzed and profiled and shown that he was in this downward spiral, which, of course, works very well with Thorsa. I mean, the two mirror each other from the wife's writings. And he was getting more and more desperate. I mean, prior to this, and I'm still probably not an expert in serial killers, but I do understand that, you know, a lot of times towards the end of their activity, they are doing everything they can just to sustain the activity while, you know, barely, you know, able to feed themselves, pay their bills, do whatever it is to keep a roof over their head.
It's like a thrill they need, right?
Right. His wife was a big part of maintaining their residences and paying their bills and doing all these kinds of things. And, you know, but I think at the end, given all of these things that go back to the early 60s, he was just exhausted and tired of it. And what else was there more for him to do? He'd set out and had gigantic, number of column inches dedicated to his activity. So that seemed to be a big reason for it. And then him also being suicidal at the time.
He wrote these letters with ciphers in them, right? Which is very interesting. Did that mean anything to you?
It does in the sense that the weaponry was military, and the ciphers, coding is a very military, has the background or the role in warfare.
And this. The way he cut glass, right, was unusual, and there was like a cross in it. That was in the letters as well. Explain that.
Right. There was the police The Percy murder was connected to three other break-ins in the area, including Lake Forest, Winnetka, of Chicago's North Shore. Uh-huh. And the police put together that those three break-ins, which occurred before the Percy murder, were all linked by evidence at the scenes of all the places, including Percy's house. And there was the method of entry that was very strange and was responsible for Mrs. Percy waking up that night initially. He made a lot of noise coming in, and this had to do with him scratching the glass with a glass cutter, scoring the glass with a glass cutter. And that there's reason to believe that that's another link between what happened in Illinois in these crimes, and then what he was writing in his letters as Zodiac, the symbol that he actually took on.
Do you think that did the murders and stuff, once he got into that, were always remote or he couldn't be linked to the Percy murder? Who was in the house when people were there? Was he robbing houses generally with people in the house?
Yes. When he, one of the crimes prior to that was a home invasion, robbery at the home of, in Lake Forest, of, a band leader named Wacker. And they broke in. Wacker was not home, but his wife was home. They made entry the same way that had been made at Percy's house. And they stole, it was him and an accomplice, one of the ones I believe he later killed. And they stole guns and I believe some furs. And I'm not sure about jewelry, but they did steal at that point.
And Wacker's a prominent name in Lake Forest, just like Percy would have been in Kenilworth. I find this a strong link, too, that he wrote one of his Zodiac letters to Melvin Belli, who was a famous attorney there, who Thorson was using as an attorney, correct?
Had used as an attorney, absolutely. In, I'm trying to remember what year it was prior to that, 64, he had hired Belli while he was trying to fight extradition from California, maybe in 65, from California to Arizona, where he maintained a residence. He had set off some bombs outside a radio station with some friends, which came back to him several years later. And like I said, they were trying to extradite him, and Thorson was in California at the time and hired Belli to defend him.
There was a bus bomb letter, and he used the reference to a basement, right? Which to me, I grew up, you know, with basements.
Sure.
That's unusual, apparently, out there, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yet his house in San Francisco had a basement. It's a very old mansion in Pacific Heights.
Why do you think that there's Ronald? He was arrested, I think, in Vegas for sexual assault, and he had, a history of, maybe beating women. But why? There's no sexual assault in any of these murders. Is that right?
Actually, the Vegas one was, I don't think it was sexual assault. It was battery. Exactly. There were no sexual assaults in these cases, and I think that's because his motive was to kill. That's what drove him.
Now we've got these. I think there's 10 murders.
However, of course, he had a rape conviction in the early 60s.
You know, you mentioned that a couple times, and I don't know anything about it besides the how did he not spend a lot of time in prison for that?
Well, he was sentenced. He was put in prison, and he was sprung, I think, about 6 weeks later. Seems to me his wife wrote that some lawyer with political connections was able to have his sentence converted to probation, but given the amount of money Thorson had at the time and his penchant to bribe people, which was well documented, it all looks very suspicious.
He was a strapping, good-looking guy, I guess, before his decline. Sort of describe what he looks like, because his hair sticks out. Well, does he? Yep. Did these guys all identify him? I know sometimes they gave 4 or 5 inches shorter than his real height, right?
Right. Well, you bring up a good point, because one thing I wasn't aware of when writing this last book, I saw a police report after that at the Lake Berryessa attacks, there were witnesses who had seen him. When he, you know, and if you remember that right before he attacked the people, he donned a hood over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't identify him or couldn't see him as well as they would have. But prior to that, he had crossed probably 500 yards of land. And at some point before or after this, and I think it was probably before, some I believe, female witnesses saw him and described him as attractive. That's the only... is a very brief description, but that fits him. I mean, I've heard numerous people look at pictures of him and things and say he was a good-looking guy. As far as the height goes, for the Percy,
yes,
of course, Mrs. Percy saw him at the scene of the crime, and there were numerous witnesses to the Zodiac's crimes, and some of those witnesses, as well as Mrs. Percy, estimated as far as 5 inches lower than him. But when Mrs. Percy saw him, he was in a crouching position over the bed,
mm-hmm.
Over Valerie. So she had him as 5'8", and he was about 6'1". So given that he would have, you know, being that tall, he would have had to crouch over to attack someone in bed, and Mrs. Percy described him as crouching. You would expect it to be about 5'8" in that case. In the Zodiac ones, there are descriptions that are kind of all over the board, but one of the closest up descriptions was when Michael Mageau was in the car being shot and looking at him, and they were in a Corvair, which is a pretty low car with a low profile on the road, meant to be a sports car or look like a sports car. And so Thorson, being 6'1", he reached in the car. They found shells on the floorboards of the car. He would have had to have lowered himself in order to be able to see in and get the gun inside the passenger compartment of the car.
You're listening to Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell. We're talking with Glenn Wall, investigated the Zodiac Killer. We'll look again in our final segment of how strong his case is, and be right back. Talking with Glenn Wall, he broke the Percy murder, now linked to the Zodiac Killer. Do you enjoy doing this, by the way, when you look into these things? Or
it's like, it gets to be like a drug, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the better the information is, you know, I mean, I just had so many moments where I've just almost fallen off the chair, you know, because I didn't expect any of this. I mean, I sat down, I don't know if you've seen it, there's a documentary on the Zodiac called This is the Zodiac Speaking. That's the first thing you should see. It's great. And I sat down to watch that, and the witnesses were talking about the way he talked, and I couldn't believe it. And then I just, you know, I mean, I knew I had to go back and start checking information, and when I did that, all of this stuff turned up.
Let's talk about this now. In the Stein murder, for example, he was described as wearing glasses, right? That's the other, you know, sort of discrepancy versus the height. Did he wear glasses at all? Was it a disguise? What do you attribute to that difference?
He did say that, or Zodiac did say that he wears disguises, and he he did not attack when he looked like his normal self. So there's nothing that I've read in the wife's book or in pictures I've seen or anything that he was wearing that he would wear glasses regularly.
Which leads me to, there were some letters from the, and you briefly alluded to this, from the Zodiac Killer to the media or the police after Thorson was killed by his wife. Does that trouble you, and do you think they're genuine?
No. In fact, I think that because there, you know, the ones that people know were written from him contain evidence, contain information that only the police would know, things like that. The ones that came later don't have that. They also seem to veer very far at times from anything that he had written previously, quoting things from Gilbert and Sullivan and whatnot. Also, if you look at the way this appears to have played out with him being killed, that it's not a stretch to suggest, I believe, that they would have wanted to either take crank letters and put them out there and proclaim them as real, or possibly produce their own ones, because he made a lot of people look really bad and now was beyond prosecution.
Have you gone to police or the FBI or anybody with your findings, or to find out, I get, whether through Freedom of Information or interviews, whether he was a suspect and prime suspect and et cetera?
Well, we know he was a suspect in the Percy murder.
Right.
As far as Zodiac, not anything I've read that he was a suspect for those crimes.
Do you feel, or do you, would you go to the police and push them on this? And
through my contacts in Illinois, my police contacts in Illinois, I made my suspicions known to them, and this was way before I knew. This was based on much less than what I know now and what I wrote about in the book, but I did make that clear, and they are aware that there's a new book out as well.
And, we were talking before we got on the air. I'm troubled by the fact that both the Zodiac and the Percy murder were unsolved, and there's, you know, evidence that the ATF, the FBI, the Chicago police, the state police, the Kenilworth police, all of them involved, and there doesn't seem to be a reason for why they were unable to solve it, right?
Yes, and of course, there was no law that they had to work together back in those days, and so it's, and there's been a lot of history, FBI history since, that they were very secretive and didn't really share credit a lot of times. Of course, Department of Homeland Security is a perfect example of why exists. So, when you were talking about evidence and basements and things like that, another thing that really incriminates him as Zodiac is in one of the letters while Thorson was alive, he talked about how after the Stein murder, the police never got within two blocks of him and were to the west. And if you know the part of the Presidio, or the part where they were searching for him after that attack, Thorson's house was exactly two blocks due east of there. You know, things like that.
You say in the book that it kind of stuck out. You may have missed a connection or something. What do you mean exactly?
Which part was that?
Right at the end, you say, I probably missed a connection. And
just simply because there's so much.
Yeah.
There are so many, there's so much information regarding all of these crimes. And, you know, I mean, people are brilliant. People have done a lot of really good work making connections, bringing information forward, finding police reports, analyzing them. It amazes me what can pop up out of the blue regarding these kinds of things. Of course, there are other people who've been studying Zodiac for years and years, and many of them, I think, have long held beliefs that, you know, are just nothing more than beliefs. So you have that going too.
And do these folks have suspects they name all the time, or
there's like a list of 10 suspects?
Is there
and
really?
Of course, Arthur Lee Anderson is the one that's most often been talked about, is the one that the film was based on with the original book. And Thorson isn't even in them.
Do you find it eerie, which I do, that first of all, the Thorson and the Percy homes were a 3-minute walk, and they were at one time buried, their graves were right near each other in the same cemetery?
Yes, for a long time. For most of the time that has elapsed since. I don't know how long it's been since, I think maybe 12 years or so since Valerie's remains were moved. But yes, that's just another very strange twist, you know, example of the truth being stranger than fiction.
All right, as we finish up in the last few seconds, what are the next steps you mentioned a couple times that you're going to do to stay on this crime?
Well, I like I said, things pop up that I'm not necessarily actively seeking, but there is information I have right now. There's something I know about going on or may not be going on in Chicago as far as some reporters I know. Looking into a very interesting aspect of the Percy case, which was in the early 70s, the FBI came out and the FBI came out with this story about how a mobster came into the FBI office in Chicago and told them who killed Percy, Valerie Percy. And in light of the things I've found, that story appears to be completely fabricated. And so there's some possible things going on as far as that goes right now. I'm not sure. I'm going to address that at some point myself. But there are members of the FBI that are still around from the Chicago office in those days. The question is, at this point, what they could say about that.
All right. Thanks to Glenn Hall. We have enjoyed having you. It's the third time we've had him on in this case. When, just like the Moxley case, we'll stay on it until there's sort of a definitive agreement on what happened. The latest book, Zodiac Maniac, The Secret History of the Zodiac Killer. The first book, Sympathy Vote, A Reinvestigation of the Valerie Percy Murder. You've been listening to Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell. Thanks to Glenn. We'll see everybody on the next edition.